This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. Top negotiators in U.S. Congress have sealed a deal on an almost $1 trillion COVID-19 economic relief package. Lawmakers announced the agreement on Sunday after days of negotiations. The agreement would establish a temporary $300 per week supplemental jobless benefit and $600 direct stimulus payments to most Americans, along with a fresh round of subsidies for hard-hit businesses and funding for schools, healthcare providers, and renters facing eviction. The final agreement was reached after a dispute over Federal Reserve emergency powers was resolved by the Senate's top Democrat and a senior conservative Republican. The House is expected to vote on the legislation on Monday. Moderna Incorporated and its partners have started distributing their COVID-19 vaccine in the United States. It's the second one approved for emergency use in the U.S. Shipments began leaving warehouses early Sunday for healthcare facilities around the country. The United States leads the world with 17.6 million cases of COVID-19 and more than 316,000 deaths. That's according to data from Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Friday approved Moderna for emergency use. Earlier this month, it approved a vaccine produced by Pfizer-BioNTech for emergency use. And between the two vaccines, the government is expecting to deliver 20 million doses to the states by the first week of January. An expert committee has put people 75 and older and essential workers like firefighters, teachers, and grocery store workers next in line for the vaccine. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says initial shots have gone so far to about 556,000 Americans. From Washington, D.C., you're listening to VOA News. Hong Kong's top court ruled unanimously Monday that the government's decision to use a colonial-era emergency law to ban face masks at protests last year was both proportionate and legal. The ruling is a blow for democracy supporters who had been hoping the Court of Final Appeal would side with the lower court and overturn the order. It also confirms that Hong Kong's chief executive, who's a pro-Beijing appointee, has the power to enact any law in a time of public emergency without needing the approval of the city's partially elected legislature. Hong Kong was beset last year by 7 months of huge and sometimes violent pro-democracy protests. Protests were eventually stifled by mass arrests, a coronavirus ban on public gatherings, and Beijing, which imposed a new national security law on the city in June. Face masks became ubiquitous as a way to reduce the risk of identification and prosecution for those taking part in peaceful marches or in violent clashes with police. In October last year, Chief Executive Carrie Lam banned anyone covering their face at public rallies. She used the Emergency Regulation Ordinance, that's a British colonial law from 1922. Opposition lawmakers challenged both the use of that emergency law and the ban on wearing masks at rallies. They argue the move breached Hong Kong's basic law, which acts as the city's constitution. A German court is to hand down its verdict on Monday on a deadly far-right attack in Halle last year that nearly became the country's worst anti-Semitic atrocity since World War II. Prosecutors say a bolted door was the only thing that prevented a heavily armed assailant from entering the eastern city's synagogue where 52 worshippers inside were marking Yad Vashem. It's the holiest day of the Jewish year. After failing to storm the temple on October 9, 2019, the attacker instead shot to death a female passerby and a man at a kebab shop. During his five-month trial, the 28-year-old defendant denied the Holocaust in open court. That's a crime in Germany. He also expressed no remorse to those targeted, many of whom are co-plaintiffs in the case. Prosecution has demanded life in prison for the defendant. His defense team has asked only for, quote, a fair sentence. A Belarusian human rights group says security forces have detained dozens of people during protests calling on strongman Alexander Lukashenko to step down. The Vyazna rights group said on December 20th that at least 42 people were detained in the capital, Minsk, and several other cities. Marches and rallies were reported in several districts of Minsk, with many carrying the opposition's red and white flag or banners. Similar protests took place across Belarus. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton from Washington. This is VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ethiopia's Prime Minister downplays tensions between his country and Sudan.
Sudan right now is dealing with the side effects of the regionalization and internationalization of the Tigray War inside Ethiopia.
Kenyan health workers defy an ultimatum to return to work today or be fired. Uganda's Bobby Wine says some of his social media channels have been hacked and deleted. The WFP says escalating conflict in three regions of Mozambique is disrupting agricultural activities. And Nigeria's main opposition PDP calls for President Buhari's resignation.
Rather than improving on the state of our security as a nation, our country is worsening in the area of insecurity by the day.
And a Cameroon official says Boko Haram militants are increasingly establishing close ties in the country's political and business circles. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Sudanese diplomat says his country is currently dealing with the side effects and internationalization of the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Ambassador Khalil Musa says Sudan is struggling to deal with about 50,000 Ethiopian refugees while at the same time trying to shore up its border. This comes as tensions between the two countries have been rising recently following border clashes. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said over the weekend that such skirmishes will not break the historic ties between Ethiopia and Sudan. Ambassador Khalil Musa agrees.
The Tigray War is no longer an internal conflict inside Ethiopia. Sudan government has decided to support the territorial integrity of Ethiopia by closing the boundaries between Sudan and Ethiopia, not to allow any Tigray TPLF to cross borders or to receive supplies through the routes in the border with Sudan and Ethiopia. Meanwhile, Sudan felt threatened by this security manner and moved its troops to fully control the borders with Ethiopia. Even Ethiopia think that there is territorial dispute, but Sudan right now is in full control of its border and territorial integrity of the country. The Ethiopian government think this kind of clashes in the borders happen because of the involvement of some local militias, but not the federal army. No decision has been taken by the federal government in Ethiopia to involve in any kind of military clashes over there.
So you don't think that this could lead to Ethiopia and Sudan going to war?
No, I don't think so, because it is not a decision of the federal government in Ethiopia, actually, to get involved in military ambush or to create this kind of military clashes in the border. Even the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Abiy Ahmed, said clearly had been happened because of some misconduct from the local militias inside Ethiopia, because Sudan army trying to control its borders with Ethiopia and to maintain and sustain its territorial integrity inside the country.
Ambassador Musa, let's talk about Saturday's second anniversary of the protest movement that led to the overthrow of former President Omar al-Bashir. What is your take on the second anniversary?
Actually, it is an inspiration for the Sudanese people looking for change on the second anniversary. But the harvest of this change is a little bit for the youth and protesters and revolutionary people that took over and follow up this kind of call of history is a little bit disappointing for two reasons. Number one, all the objective and the passion for change haven't been realized yet. The second reason also that the political stability and the course for democratic transformation is a little bit ambiguous so far. In addition to all that, it is about the economic hardship. People doesn't feel any kind of change in their living standard or the hardship of their daily life. But in terms of political freedom and in terms of an inspiration and passion for change, definitely this kind of meaning touches the heart of the people. But actually on the ground, nothing much has been changed so far.
Ambassador Khalil Musa is a former Sudanese diplomat. He was speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
health services continue to be paralyzed in Kenya as the nurses and clinical workers strike enters its third week. The Cabinet Secretary for Health has issued an ultimatum to the striking health workers to avert the strike or risk losing their jobs. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, doctors, dentists, and pharmacists are also set to join the strike from today, Monday, after a two-week window for government to strike a consensus expired.
The nurses and clinical officers' strike has caused a major health crisis in the country. It has forced relatives to evacuate their patients from public hospitals and seek medical care in private health facilities. Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe has warned the striking health workers that they risk losing their jobs if they do not resume work immediately. Kagwe urged the nurses to comply with a court order to suspend the strike for 14 days in order to give dialogue a chance.
Therefore, I urge you again and appeal to you to adhere to the courts, what the courts have held, and to adhere to your own hearts to come back so that we can help our people. Having said so, I think it is also important for me to be clear, those of you who may have been on strike, to resume to avoid losing your jobs. Please do not lose your job. Do not be the one statistic again who will be a job seeker next year.
Kenya National Union of Nurses Secretary General Seth Panyako, while speaking at a funeral of a nurse who succumbed to COVID-19, warned the Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe against issuing dismissal threats to health workers. Panyako added that the health workers will only resume work once the national government has addressed their issues.
There is no going back to work. We want comprehensive medical cover. It must be there. We want group life insurance. It must be there. We want all our contracted nurses who have not earned for 14, 15 months to be paid all their salaries. There will be no going back to work until all our issues are addressed. There will be no taking back nurses to work to go and die. And for the first time, I want to tell you, you can see the entire nursing fraternity is united. There is no dissenting voices because we are fighting for a justified cause. And I'm telling you, Kakwe, we will not go back.
The health crisis is expected to worsen today, Monday, as doctors prepare to also down their tools after talks to avert the strike collapsed. Doctors' Union, which had suspended their strike for 14 days to give dialogue a chance, now say 8 teams of doctors will also withdraw their services, which could cripple healthcare services in all public hospitals. Those who depend on public hospitals, especially residents of informal settlements, will have to look for an alternative. This comes at a time when the country is battling the second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Ugandan parliamentarian and presidential candidate Robert Chakulai, popularly known as Bobby Wine, said Sunday that his Facebook pages and two online televisions affiliated with his National Unity Platform Party have been hacked and deleted. This comes a few weeks after the Ugandan Communications Commission wrote to Facebook and Google asking them to shut down Bobby Wine's social media pages because they mobilized the riots that resulted in the death of 50 people. Officials of the Uganda Communications Commission were not immediately available to speak to VOA despite promising to do so. Joel Senyonyi is a spokesperson for Bobby Wine's National Unity Platform Party.
It's a clear manifestation of the state trying to curtail media freedoms, trying to curtail the media from, one, exposing the brutality of the state, but also showing the world, you know, that people are yearning for change. Ugandans are yearning for change. But these acts of the state are not going to slow us down. They're not going to in any way cut our speed. We'll keep moving. So those that were deleted, they've opened new ones and they're quickly gaining impetus. We'll keep moving. We are not deterred.
How many of your platforms do you think have been affected by this hacking?
The ones that have been deleted are the online ones. Two of them have been deleted today. In fact, one, it's not the first time that it gets hacked. This is actually the third time that this gets to happen. The others, they have tried, but they are not succeeding yet. But for the other, generally, media houses and journalists, they've been given a deadline of tomorrow, 21st, that they must be accredited for them to be able to cover our candidate, which is ridiculous.
We've made all attempts to reach the Uganda Communications Commission, which I think is responsible for this. They have not been forthcoming, but I think it was just a month ago or earlier this month that the Ugandan government asked Facebook and Google to shut down what they call them pro-Bobby Wine social media pages. Please talk to us about this.
Recently, they wrote to Google asking it to close down the online, especially the YouTube channels that have been covering his rallies. Why? Because they have been exposing the state brutality and all of that, but also showing the support that Honorable Kyagulanyi has, and the state does not want that. And so when Google told them, please go to court, they said, okay, let's find other ways of cutting down the speed of these guys. So that's how they used the hackers to hack into these platforms and delete them and so on. So
on the national security concern, the Ugandan government says that it has no control over these social media outlets and it cannot censor the content posted by Facebook.
You know, whenever the state wants to do any clampdown, they always find an excuse, you know, economic sabotage and all of that. For even say, for 35 years at least, Museveni has been in power, our economy is not doing all right. Many young people are unemployed and so on and so forth. It's not been because of these channels, many of which were opened recently. So it's just a scapegoat. It's an excuse that they are using to try and justify their illegal acts.
How much impact do you think the hacking and the deleting of your social media platforms could have on the Honorable Bobby Wine's campaign for the 2021 presidential election?
Well, our campaigns are still ongoing. We finished the day's rallies for today. Tomorrow we'll be in several other places. Like I said, as far as the media is concerned, you know, these online channels that were closed, they've immediately opened up others. And many people have quickly followed them and liked them. And so they're up and running. So I'll tell you something, nothing can stop an idea whose time has come. Absolutely nothing. So whatever they do, like I said, is like fetching water using a basket. It amounts to nothing.
Joel Senyanyi is the spokesperson for Uganda opposition presidential candidate Bobby Wine's National Unity Platform Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 21st. The World Food Program, WFP, says escalating violence and increased insecurity in Mozambique's three northernmost provinces are disrupting agricultural activities and causing food prices to skyrocket. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Food Program says this is spurring dangerous levels of hunger and malnutrition. The WFP says over 900,000 people in the region are reaching emergency levels of food insecurity. WFP spokesman Thompson Theory says a recent mission to these areas found malnourished children on the brink of starvation.
Cabo Delgado, it has to be noted, it has the highest rates of chronic malnutrition in Mozambique, with more than half the children malnourished. Without urgent and sustained access and assistance, the situation may turn into another major humanitarian disaster.
Theory says other vulnerable groups, including pregnant and nursing women, also need urgent nutritional support. In light of this emergency, WFP says it plans to scale up its humanitarian operation in Mozambique's volatile northern provinces, aiming to deliver needed food to 750,000 people. The agency is appealing for $117 million for its humanitarian operation during the next 12 months. Without the required financial support, it says it will have to cut food rations to this population. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has called for the resignation of President Muhammadu Buhari because the party said he has failed to deliver on the three promises he made to Nigerians during his election campaign. PDP National Chairman Uche Sekundus said over the weekend that President Buhari has failed to ensure the security of Nigerians due to the increase in the number of kidnappings in the country. Kola Olumbodinya is the National Publicity Secretary of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party.
We believe that he has failed in every ramification. Mr. President, while campaigning in 2015, promised to fight corruption, promised to fight insurgency. And he also promised to re-engineer the Nigerian economy. 6 years almost down the line, Mr. President has failed and woefully too to achieve any of his three promises. And rather than improving on the state of our security as a nation, our country is worsening in the area of insecurity by the day. The issue of insecurity and in its magnitude is happening almost per second. And as such, if Mr. President fails to protect our lives and property, which is the base of governance, what is the essence of his being in office? That is why the national chairman of our party, Prince Uche Secondus, demanded for his resignation.
But is it fair, because the abduction isn't President Buhari's fault, because no one could have predicted this would happen?
The abduction would largely be said to have been the failure of leadership of President Muhammadu Buhari. I need to let you know that Mr. President was in his home state of Katsina when the abduction happened. Even after the return of these students, another abduction had happened. What we are saying is that it's painful and least expected of the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria that with the gale of abductions that had happened in Katsina, Mr. President has not demonstrated empathy in whatever form with victims or their parents. The entire nation demanded that Mr. President should visit the school to sympathize with their parents. We never got that.
Now, some people might say that the PDP is playing politics with the issue of security in Nigeria.
We have heard that over and over. But we have made it clear, and Nigerians have also made it clear to Mr. President, as well as his party, the All Progressives Congress, that the People's Democratic Party is merely drawing the attention of Mr. President to the desires, the wants, the needs, the demands of Nigerians. And he needs to address that.
It's always nice to talk with you. We do appreciate very much.
Thank you very much.
Kola Olubandia is the National Publicity Secretary of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. A Cameroonian official said last week that he had found evidence that, as widely suspected, Boko Haram militants have been establishing close ties in Cameroonian political and business circles. The revelation came after Cameroon's military arrested a former lawmaker for allegedly supplying cattle to the Nigerian terrorist group. Moki Edwin Kinsnika reports from Yaoundé.
Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region on Nigeria's border, says that within the past 2 months, Boko Haram has been establishing ties with top officials of his region. He spoke via a messaging app from the northern town of Marwa.
Boko Haram a aujourd'hui des complices qui sont parmi nous.
He says security reports indicate that Boko Haram has infiltrated some political, business, and elite circles along Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. He says Boko Haram accomplices in the communities supply food and money for the terrorists to procure weapons. Bakari says the military has been assigned to arrest those who have established ties with Boko Haram. Bakari did not say how many people have been arrested for establishing ties with the terrorist group, but this week, local media reported the arrest by Cameroon's military of a former member of parliament, Blama Mala, for alleged ties with the Boko Haram. He has been detained in the northern town of Mora. The media reports that Mala, a member of President Paul Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party, is accused of supplying cattle and money to Boko Haram. Mala was arrested after his cousin, a member of a local militia in the border town of Kolofata in the Mayo Sava Administrative Unit, was seen transporting 10 cattle to a border area where Boko Haram fighters hide. He was arrested by the military. Local media said the cousin confessed that he had received orders from Mala to supply the cattle to Boko Haram. The government has not issued a statement.
VOA could not independently confirm his account. Retired Colonel Dide Bajek, a security specialist and former Cameroon defense spokesperson, says while the military is stepping up intelligence to arrest the suspects, civilians should be on the alert.
Faudrait comprendre que les populations ont un rôle important à jouer parce que
Bajek says it is imperative for civilians to inform the military of the presence of strange people in their areas. It is also important, he says, that civilians report their neighbors who invite suspected Boko Haram members. He says civilians may not know of financial transactions between suspects and Boko Haram, but that the population should immediately call the military when they see food and cattle being transported to the bush where terrorists may be hiding. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2020 Men's Taipei Marathon, where Kenyans dominated the male category after former two-time Paris Marathon champion Paul Longyangata led compatriot Elisha Rotich to a 1-2 finish. Longyangata, who was competing for the first time this season after winning the Shanghai International Marathon in 2019, cut the tape in 2 hours, 8 minutes, 26 seconds, beating fellow Kenyan Rotich, who came in second in a time of 2 hours, 12 minutes, 15 seconds, while Spaniard Tidrick Nome was third in 2 hours, 15 minutes, 19 seconds. In cricket news, Cricket South Africa on Sunday announced that the entire national team has tested negative for coronavirus ahead of the 2-match test series against Sri Lanka. The CSA said the COVID-19 tests were conducted on Saturday upon players' entry into the biosecure environment. Cricket South Africa's interim board, in the meantime, has expressed its concern about the national men's team, the Proteas, not showing sufficient support for the Black Lives Matter movement. The board outlined those concerns in a statement in which it also mentioned that it was suspending the social justice and nation-building initiative that was the brainchild of a former director, Dr. Eugenia Kula Ameyau. Staying with South Africa, Tanjana Shoemaker has won the Swami Award for the African Female Swimmer of the Year for the 3rd year in a row. The South African, despite a year full of lockdowns and cancellation in light of COVID-19, managed to lower 4 out of the 6 South African records in the women's breaststroke events, 3 of which were also African records. And now to football news. Ghana came from behind to beat Burkina Faso 2-1 and win the WAFU B Under-20 Championship Trophy at the Stade Charles de Gaulle in Porto Novo on Saturday. Set-piece specialist Precious Boa was a Black Satellite's hero as he set up a goal before firing the winner from a free kick to hand his country the title in the Benin capital. The two teams will now represent WAFU B at the total Under-20 AFCON in Mauritania next February. Elsewhere, Tanzania and Uganda have qualified for the 2021 Under-17 African Cup of Nations that will take place in Morocco next year. To end their ticket, Uganda beat a resilient Djibouti 1-0 at the Muganda Stadium in Rubavu on Sunday, while Tanzania defeated Ethiopia 4-3 on penalties to book a place in the final of the CECAFA Under-17 tournament. The two countries will also tussle it out in the CECAFA Under-17 finals on Tuesday, a tie that will decide who the regional champion will be. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ray K. Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.